Let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? The sports ball.
Simone Biles, a gymnast, a hero, as we're told. Our best bet at gold medals in the Olympics. She pulled out this morning of the team final, arguing that this is about maintaining her mental health. Now, arguably, it cost us the gold medal. The United States ended up winning the silver. Everyone seemed to believe that if she were participating, we would have won the gold. Instead, the Russians got the gold. And as of right now, it's unclear if she'll be back participating in the solo competition. So she dropped out effectively due to mental distress or emotional distress.
Physically, I feel good. I'm in shape. Emotionally, that kind of varies on the time and the moment, you know, coming here to the Olympics and being the head star of the Olympics is not an easy feat. So we're just trying to take it one day at a time and we'll see.
So the way she's talking about it is the pressure is on her shoulders and it's a little bit too much to handle. She is seen as, like I said, this hero gymnast, the best chance we have at winning the gold. And undoubtedly, that's going to be a lot of pressure. It is. Being the face of the U.S. Olympics team, like across the board of all the sports, that has a heavy burden. And it feels like this is the perfect conversation to have with some nuance, which if you look online and you look at some of the tweets that have been sent out, frankly, on both sides of this issue, missing a whole lot of the nuance. Because on the one hand, she is treated undoubtedly in ways that other athletes are not. She is protected from criticism. She's protected from criticism. Because, on the other hand, this is not your typical case of an athlete who is just saying, it's just a lot for me to handle. There's a backstory here that at least plays a small role in it. At least. Now, I think it probably plays a bigger role. You'll recall the news that the team doctor, Larry Nassar, was charged with sexually abusing gymnasts, Olympians, and Simone Biles says she was one of them. Now, to be clear, she hasn't cited that specifically as a reason for the emotional anguish, but I have to assume that plays some role in all of this. I can't imagine it playing no role in the pressure that you might feel and the traumatic experiences that could be brought up because of her position right now in the Olympics. But again, she hasn't cited it specifically.
I say put mental health first, because if you don't, then you're not going to enjoy your sport and you're not going to succeed as much as you want to. So it's okay sometimes to even sit out the big competitions to focus on yourself, because it shows how strong of a competitor and person that you really are, rather than just battle through it.
I mean, well, does it? And that's where we have to talk about this honestly. So how do you do that? How do you talk about this specific instance in an honest way without being insensitive? And so for me, I say push aside some of the potential backstory, because she hasn't addressed that. She hasn't cited that. Let's focus on the emotional argument that she makes for a moment. And think of it even not specifically for Simone Biles. This idea that there is a lot riding on a competition, it's making you feel emotionally unwell, whatever that means to the individual. We had the same conversation with what's-her-name, Naomi Osaka, who was out today in an embarrassing loss to someone who is ranked number 45 in the world.
Yeah, but she's playing for Japan. We're worried about Team USA.
I'm just saying she dropped out of
Wimbledon,
a tennis tournament, over the virtually the same argument, just like the mental health aspects to all of this. I think that is fair to criticize when we're talking about athletes, certainly elite athletes. What do you call a player who is incredibly gifted, but can't perform on the national stage? We don't look at them and say, oh, well, we really should consider their emotional well-being. No, you say they're not ready for the big leagues. They can't handle the pressure. You put them back into the minor leagues, you cut them from the team, and maybe you do it begrudgingly because they're not able to perform. Part of being an athlete of this caliber is the mental side of things. We hear that all the time from athletes. It's not just the physical, it's the mental. I think sometimes people go a little bit overboard and say, oh, well, it's way more mental. It's like 90% mental, 10% physical. Not in football. Let's stop this nonsense. You're going to have to be pretty physical to be able to perform. But maybe for certain roles on a football team. Or we talk about this all the time on the soccer side. Like players, particularly strikers, if they're in a rut, that goes on for a long time unless mentally you can get around it. We had this conversation with the Mariners player. What's his name? Who got pulled up from the minors. He's supposed to be this big...
Jared Kelnick.
I was about to say him. I was asking the question more, you know.
No, I know. You're a big Jared Kelnick fan.
I was setting it up for a dramatic show of my intelligence of... What's his name?
Jared Kelnick.
Kelnick. Shut up. I was about to say that. Stop it. Lots of excitement around him. Didn't perform to the best of his ability. A lot of the conversation was just mentally, is he ready for it? And they said no, and they moved him. They didn't show him the kind of support that Simone Biles is getting because of that backstory. And so is it fair to have any of these conversations surrounding her? No. It is fair, however, in my view, to talk about the bigger story around here, which is that you have more and more folks, a generation of people, who claim mental anguish or emotional health issues or concerns where they don't exist. Simone Biles has that and it exists for her. And I think that's fair. But you have people, particularly in the workplace, who are 20-somethings, who think that they are 1 8-hour full workday away from a mental health crisis. And that's the part where I see folks on Twitter starting to come to her defense and say, well, you know, life is just so much more difficult for people of a certain age. No, it's not. Stop that nonsense. That pisses me off. And that pushes me away from wanting to just go ahead and back Simone Biles because it sends a deeper message, or at least it's taken as a deeper message. I have concern for Simone Biles because of a clearly traumatic event in her life. Now, should she have maybe assumed some of those feelings would come up? And if she didn't think she would be able to cope with them, maybe not perform on the national, on the international stage, because there are consequences of this. Maybe. I imagine she, if that was actually the issue here, she thought about it and said, no, I think I can cope. And then in the moment, couldn't. That's fair. She's human. But we got to stop the mental anguish stuff on stuff that isn't serious. This is serious, right? We can all agree that this is something that's serious in her background that reasonable people and unreasonable people can come together and say, okay, I get that. It's all the other stuff that people are jumping in on and using this and will continue to use this to make excuses for their mental health concerns. They say, well, man, you know, I'm so glad Simone Biles stepped up and she showed some bravery here. She got rid of the stigma associated with some of the mental health concerns that we have. And you know what? I'm going to have to do that too. I'm going to take next week and the week after and maybe the week after that off from work just because, you know, I'm just having some mental health issues right now. Just the stress is just not healthy for me. Sir, you got hired yesterday. This is your HR orientation. Yeah, but it's just, you know, now that I'm thinking about all the work that I got to do.
It's been really taxing.
Yeah, it's just
HR orientation.
A lot. I mean, this orientation, you made me sit through a video on sexual harassment in the workplace, which was really traumatic to me because of an experience I had. I'm so sorry. I didn't know that. Yeah, I had to sit through another video of the same content about a month ago at my last job, and it was a lot. That's the trauma. Yeah, it's just, you know, it's repetitive, and I don't like to see the same, like, I'll never watch the same episode of Friends more than once. Like, that's the kind of, that's your trauma. Yeah.
Now you
questioning me is making me more traumatic.
You're saying to, you know, back it up. So, Jason, let me come in with my own. I have this really abusive, horrible boss that I just really need to take some time off. I'm have a mental break from because this boss has caused me so much trauma. So I think I'm going to need to take a significant amount of time off, Jason.
How about this? You ready?
Oh, I think I'm ready.
Man up!
So do I.
Or woman up! How about that?
Okay.
I think I was going to say that.
Yeah, way to be inclusive.
Suck it up, you big baby.
Ugh.
Oh!
I wonder who my horrible, abusive
at work.
Boss is.
Oh, he throws staplers at me when I screw up. Oh, my God. He got mad I didn't bring him the right kind of coffee. Oh, my God. Oh, your life is so hard. Do you get paid? Oh, I barely get paid. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The coronavirus.
I found this particularly concerning to me. That we're clearly going down the line of COVID mandates. I said it in the last hour. The Biden administration announced that they're considering mandating the thousands and thousands and thousands of federal employees to get the vaccine. The VA yesterday announced that their 100,000 plus staff of front-facing, public-facing health roles, health staff, have to get vaccinated. I broke the story last week that here in Washington State, the Attorney General's office is mandating, or is ready to mandate, once they get out of the draft policy part, they're going to mandate that employees get vaccinated regardless of their willingness to work from home the entire time, if that's an option. We are moving in that direction. Bill de Blasio today on MSNBC offered his logic behind their mandates for certain positions, their city workers, getting the vaccine.
We've got to shake people at this point and say, come on now. We tried voluntary. You know, we could not have been more kind and compassionate as a country. Free testing everywhere you turn, incentives, friendly, warm embrace. The voluntary phase is over. We can keep doing those things. I'm not saying shut it down. I'm saying voluntary alone doesn't work. It's time for mandates because it's the only way to protect our people.
Except that's terrifying, and that exact logic can be used to do all sorts of things. Right? This isn't just about COVID. Democrats love the nanny state. Democrats love telling you how to live your life. Now, of course, they don't always follow their own rules. They tell you to not go into crowded restaurants, then go to the French Laundry in California for a party. They tell you you can't go to any kind of non-essential business, and then Mayor Lori Lightfoot gets an awful haircut. You have Nancy Pelosi. You have to wear a mask indoors no matter what. When she gets her haircut, she takes off her mask. They don't follow their own rules. Sometimes they do. They're vaccinated and they think you should too. I think you should too. The difference is I respect your ability to make up your own mind. This is now on you. If you want to risk it, then you're going to risk it. I hope you don't take that risk. I hope you do things in a safe way given your own personal circumstances. I don't want to mandate. And that really is, this comes down to Democrats versus Republicans. It has become political in the sense that, as an ideology, folks on the right generally believe less government interference in your life. Right? That is just as a principle of the Republican Party, of what it is we believe. Democrats hold the opposite position. As a principle, they expect the government to have more say in what you do, how you do it, when you do it, why you do it. We both believe it's for the greater good. I don't believe that most Democrats who hold that position do it in a nefarious way or hold that position for nefarious reasons. Sometimes it's done in nefarious ways. And that's the concern. Now, there was a comment that Governor Cuomo made yesterday during his press conference. And I want people to be able to differentiate, there we go, speak words.
Way to go, radio host.
Between nefarious intent and well-intentioned but horrible policy. Because there's a clip of Cuomo going around in which some people are rightly calling out his logic as disturbing and his way of positioning this as disturbing. And there are other folks, crazy people, who are pretending this is like Nazis. They're coming for you like Nazis came for the Jews. That's what some people believe. Listen to this. Once we actually turn on the audio. There we go. Hold on. Well, nothing's coming out of the audio. So why are you giving me that look?
Because it's fine on my end.
Well, then why don't I hear it?
I don't know why you don't hear it. Do you want me to play it on my side?
Yes, play it. This is Governor Andrew Cuomo speaking at his press conference.
And we have to get in those communities, and we have to knock on those doors, and we have to convince people and put them in a car and drive them and get that vaccine in their arm. That is the mission.
Now, folks on Twitter on the right claiming that this is like Nazi Germany. He's like Hitler. Also that they could make some weird comparison to Jews who were facing a genocide, an extermination in the view of Nazis. He was not saying, in fairness to Cuomo, that they are going to force you to get the vaccine, knock on your door, kidnap you, and take you to get vaccinated. He's saying they're going to go door to door and convince you to get in the car with them, not forcefully, but convince you to get in the car and get vaccinated. I think his approach is disturbing. Don't knock on my door. You are not going to like the response I give you. But it is not like Nazi Germany. And I got into it a little bit last night on Twitter with the same group of lunatics who want to pretend that they are victims or potentially victims like Jews in Nazi Germany. What is my general rule in making comparisons between anything that's happening now or what will happen in the future with Nazis and Jews and the Holocaust and Hitler? What's my rule?
Your rule is don't.
Don't do it. Why? Because there is no comparison. Now, if Cuomo was coming around and he was rounding up all the unvaccinated, putting them on trains or maybe subways, and sending them to concentration camps with the inevitable event of death. Okay. But Jason, do we have to wait until that happens? It's not going to happen. So shut up. You can call out forced mandates as despicable, as wrong, as unconstitutional, as terrifying. It is not the same as being rounded up with the intent of torture, experimentation, and then murder. That's the difference. I don't know why folks on our side in this case are acting like folks on the other side. Antifa love to go around and claim they were fighting real Nazis. They're all fascists. It's all coming to this country. Don't you know what Donald Trump is going to do? Don't you understand? And so they justify their stupid behavior, their criminal behavior, their dangerous behavior, because they stupidly claim that there are Nazis, and it's going to come here to the United States, and we got to do something about it. Why is it that folks on the right are now doing it? Not many. Some are doing it. The same thing. And it's almost like you're begging to be treated like a Jew in Germany during the Holocaust. Why would you want that? It's just some weird complex that some people have, and they get all upset when you call it out.
Remember how everybody wants to be heroes?
Everyone wants to be a victim.
Everyone wants to be victims, Jason. I've been saying this for years.
They want to be victims because what do you get out of victimhood? Attention. You get the ability to post on Twitter about your victimhood and people will sympathize with you. Stop this nonsense. Can we not just call out really bad policies without pretending that we are victims of another Hitler? Just stop that. Stop it. Stupid. That's all. That's what I got.
Why'd you look at me when you said stupid?
Well, this is natural instinct.
Okay.
Like if I say good-looking, witty, humble, I look at myself in a mirror. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. Hey, look at that. It's 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for the Big Local, brought to you by Alpine Specialty Cleaning at alpineclean.com. This is the time of the show where we completely ignore the city of Seattle because, let's be honest, they're already getting a whole bunch of attention from the media here. And instead, we focus all of our attention on the communities you live in and care about most. We start with a tragic story out of Vancouver where a sheriff's deputy was murdered. It happened over the weekend. As of now, all three suspects, or at least the persons of interest, are in custody. Originally, there was one that was still on the run, and they were able to arrest him. Now, it happened on Saturday to 46-year-old Jeremy Brown. He was on duty as a detective. He He was doing some kind of surveillance. Beyond that, we don't yet have the details. We're now hearing a little bit more about who he was, because obviously there are a lot of folks that are impacted at an event like this, his family, his friends, his colleagues. Clark County Sheriff Chuck Atkins spoke with Fox 12.
This is going to go on for a lifetime. This isn't something that goes away. I am heartbroken for the impact that this has had on you individually and on a bigger scale on every Clark County Sheriff's Office employee that was graced with Jeremy's quick smile and his kind heart.
So what's always interesting and instructive or revealing when things like this happen is the response. You oftentimes have a community coming together to remember a fallen officer, a fallen deputy, regardless of the circumstances, be it on the job or off, right? They come together because for the most part, this country is filled with people who truly do respect and support law enforcement. Sometimes it doesn't feel that way. And sometimes I think we do a poor job of speaking up on behalf of officers in the face of all the attacks, both literally and figuratively, coming from the right. But in this case, people are stepping up in the community and they care deeply. They care deeply about this man and they care deeply about all the other officers. But then, of course, you have the fringe members of Antifa and BLM and other radicals who come up there like they did over the weekend on Twitter to mock him and mock his death. When they say ACAB, they truly mean it. When they chant the only good cop is a dead cop, they mean it. And they expose themselves every single time something like this happens. They don't hide who they are. And of course, few Democrats will step up and say anything. They want to curry the Antifa vote. They sometimes agree with ACAB. Sometimes they're scared of Antifa lunatics or any other BLM radical showing up to their homes and giving them a hard time if they were to, God forbid, step up and say this kind of treatment of a fallen officer is despicable. I didn't see flags flown at half mast, none of that. I didn't see a press conference from the governor's office about this. I didn't even see a press statement. Maybe he sent one out that someone else, of course, wrote. But the lack of support sometimes when officers need it most is alarming to me. And so obviously, once we get more details about what happened to Jeremy Brown, we will certainly expose them. Because this is the kind of stuff that I do think is rather important to step up and talk about and highlight, because we know that others won't. We know that we need to speak louder than the losers on Twitter who think this is funny, who are celebrating this. Meanwhile, out in Everett, there is a business owner who is being proactive. She is stepping up and telling customers to her particular store, J. Matheson Gifts Kitchen and Gourmet, that you will have to wear a mask.
Well, last Saturday, 10 people said no, and I said, would you please put a mask on? Today, I had a lady with a big, didn't have her mask on, and hadn't been vaccinated, and she yelled at me and thought it was awful, and I said, you're trying to protect others, dear.
Okay, yeah, we got it here. That's Judy Matheson. She's the owner of the gift shop. She tells King 5 that she was asking customers their vaccination status, and if you said you were fully vaccinated, you were able to enter without a mask. But now, she said, no, I'm going to play it a little bit more safe because folks like Dr. Chris Spitters is recommending that anyone indoors, regardless of your vaccination status, should go ahead and wear a mask.
Good. I'm so glad. I really am. It's, you know, it's really spreading.
Okay. I mean, that's true. It's not spreading, really, if you're vaccinated. The people who are in the hospital or the ones who are unvaccinated. Turns out you can get a vaccine right now if you want one. But she's being proactive. She's following the advice. Of course, CDC came out today with their update to the update of their update of their update of their update of the conflicting advice that they've been giving us over the last year. And so she is mandating you wear a mask.
Wearing a mask is not a problem. I mean, you know, we have to care about others is what we have to care about.
No, we got it. Did you know she cares about others?
So I've heard.
She said it twice in just package. One small package on King 5. She cares about others.
Yeah, she's a hero, Jason.
So this is her right. She gets to do this as a business owner. I see some folks on our side of the aisle getting mad when someone like this does this kind of mandate. She gets to make this mandate. It is her right. Likewise, it is our right to not shop at her store. Now, I'm not someone who lives in Everett or goes to Everett all that frequently. I certainly would not be in the market for what she sells, so I'm not boycotting her store. But I've taken a position that says, if you're going to make me, who's fully vaccinated, wear a mask indoors, I'm not going to go to your store. Now, will there be some instances where I have to compromise? Maybe, probably. It depends on the situation. But if I'm in a position where I don't have to spend my money at your business, if I am not desperate for whatever it is that I might end up having to buy, I'll go elsewhere. If it comes to the point where no other place will have me because I'm not going to wear a mask indoors when fully vaccinated, I'll shop online. That's what I'll do.
Wow, that's very simple.
It is really, really simple. If you're going to make these moves, well, I'm also going to make these moves. I don't want to. I understand that businesses are struggling, and businesses now will struggle even more as a result of this. But that's on you. Until there's an actual mandate, if you're going to come up with one on your own, I'm just not going to shop there. That said, a message for the folks who are out there right now who are going into businesses without a mask because the business doesn't require it at this point. Don't lie about your vaccine status. It is okay to me if someone asks you to tell them your vaccination status, you can say, it's none of your business. Because that's what I would say. And I say that as someone who's vaccinated. My assumption is if you say that, people will assume that you're not vaccinated. I'm fully vaccinated, but I don't think a business should be asking me that. You can put up your sign that says, if vaccinated, keep off your mask. You either trust me or you don't. You ask me, I'm going to say it's none of your business. Just don't lie about it. Because there are other people who we should be considerate of. And maybe they would want to wear a mask if you're around and you're unvaccinated. You shouldn't make that decision for them. Let them make their own decisions. The same way I'm saying we should all make a decision as to whether or not we should get vaccinated. Well, they can make a decision as to whether or not, if you're unvaccinated, they want to be around you or if they want to have a mask on. Just don't lie.
So
it is permissible to say, I'm not going to answer that question. I think it's wrong to lie. If you're unvaccinated, if you're vaccinated and you're saying I'm not vaccinated, it's wrong.
So this is a two-step thing. If somebody is saying that you need to wear a mask and you don't, just go somewhere else.
If you want, that's what I'm doing.
And then also don't lie about vaccination status. Where's the part where you go viral, scream at the store owner, and have somebody videotape it just for a bunch of clicks?
What are you doing after the show later? You want to go to Everett?
Yeah. Let's go cause a scene.
Jacob, who's filling in or who's learning how to produce this show, can you film with a steady hand? Do you know how to do that? Could you hold it well?
Oh, I can hold it for you.
Okay. Do you know how to edit video?
Yeah.
Really good? Can you make it slick?
Mm-hmm. Better than Peyton.
I mean, let's be honest, it's a low bar.
I think we got Fox News story brewing here, Jason.
Let me text Harris. Harris Faulkner, I've got a good story for you that we're going to break next week. Brave talk show host boldly says no to old lady who doesn't want me in her store without a mask.
Like a 90-year-old woman, this is going to be awesome.
I think she's 75. I think she's going to slap me. How do you know she's going to slap you? I thought this was a news story. It hasn't happened, so yeah, no. Should I pitch that to Harris Faulkner, who's going to be on the show at 5:30?
Yeah, just run that by her.
See if she wants to cover it. Yeah, it could be fun. Harris Faulkner going to be on the show at 5:30. I'm super excited. I love Harris. She is a brilliant journalist, mostly because when you say something that doesn't make sense, or if you just flatly lie, she will call you out in a heartbeat, and she does not skip a beat. That's why I love her interviews.
Yeah, she's good at what she does.
She's so good. I love Harris. She's going to be on at 5:30. You're not going to want to miss that.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really do appreciate it. There's a mayoral race going on right now in Seattle. I voted for Casey Sixkiller. I hope you will, too. I voted for Ann Davison for Seattle City Attorney. I hope you will, too. I voted for Kate Martin and for Sarah Nelson for the two at-large positions. I hope you do, too, because I know you are seeing exactly what I'm seeing, what we're all seeing, the rise in crime. And those are the candidates who, if they are put in office, will be able to address it. Now, as it comes to the mayoral candidates, I can tell you that other than Casey Sixkiller, of the top-tier candidates, the ones who potentially could actually win and go into the general, you're not getting much substance. We had a weekend of incredible violence. We are on pace right now to do worse, to break last year's 26-year high homicide rate record. And there's no one with a plan. There's no one with a plan. There are a lot of people who have some talking points, the rote ones, the ones that you're supposed to say. So, like, for example, Justin Farrell. What should be done when we have shootings like we had over the weekend?
I would start by just acknowledging, you know, and offering my deepest condolences to the people who have lost loved ones.
Okay. I mean, I would prefer a plan that would prevent those loved ones from being lost in the first place. I mean, that should we get more cops? Because we do have a record low staffing situation.
It is not just a question of, you know, do we need more police? In some instances we do, but it is absolutely, we need a comprehensive approach.
Oh, what is your comprehensive approach? Do you tell Cairo 7 TV at any point?
We know that when economic stressors go up, gun violence goes up. And so we need to make sure that every single person in our community has what they need to be able to feel stable and secure.
Okay, if they don't have what they need to feel economically secure, they're going to just go ahead and shoot people to settle arguments. Got it. Because that's what happened over the weekend, for example, one of the shootings. Or maybe that drive-by shooting in Lake City. I guess that was because of economic issues. They didn't feel economically secure. So in other words, Justin Farrell has no clue what in the world she is doing. She has no clue. Or she's too cowardly to explain what's the cause here, which very clearly is a combination of defunding the police and prosecutors who don't keep criminals in jail, who keep giving them chances over and over and over again. How about Lorena Gonzalez, council president, one of the main proponents of defunding the police? What should be done as it relates to the violence that we're seeing, the homicides?
Ask for peace and healing in this really tragic moment.
That you know, that's my bad. In all of this, I guess I never thought to just say, can't we all just get along?
Doesn't Adrian Diaz say that every week when he's like, hey, Seattle, please put the guns
down? So ask for peace and healing or something. Okay. Okay. Well, can we get a fully deployable staff that isn't at the rate of what it was in the 80s?
Murder rates in Seattle have gone up consistently over the past decade, even as our police budgets and their staffing grew in that same context.
That's not true. You know how I know that what she just said is not true, that it's been steadily going up in the last decade despite putting money into the police department? Do you know how I know that? Any guesses? I looked up the data. She's not telling you the truth. Now, maybe she doesn't understand the data. Maybe she's not good with numbers. I'm not particularly good with numbers, although I'll be honest, they make it really, really easy to look up this kind of stuff. We hovered around the same amount of murders, homicides, in the last 10 years for about 7 of them. And then things start to took a turn for the worse when all these new policies went into place. You can quite literally point to the years where all these policies of permitting violent offenders to go free without any severe punishment with the rise in crime. You can do the same with the rise in the fatal overdose crisis when we stop prosecuting drug laws. It's unbelievable how little she knows. or how willing she is to lie to you. Now, of course, Colleen Echohawk, same thing. Policing, what? There's no room for police.
I want to be effective in the work of public safety. I don't, the data does not show that more cops on the street make our streets more safe. Oh, that,
okay, yeah, you're right. I remember, and this was very weird, I remember the last time there was a murder when we had a fully functional police department that was done right in front of cops. There, don't you remember the times of Seattle where murders were being done right in front of uniformed police officers? They wouldn't care that they would immediately be arrested and or shot. They didn't care. They were just murdering people in full view of a cop. Oh, that's not how it works in Seattle. It's not how it ever worked in Seattle. Hey, Bruce Harrell, what do you say? What about policing?
More police are one of the solutions, but not just police officers as we think traditionally.
Oh,
effective police officers, better police officers.
Okay.
What we want to see are police officers that are out of the cars, building community trust.
Like they used to until the council said, you can't do that anymore. And then activists said, we don't want that. You mean proactive policing, which requires a fully functional department that has enough staff to do that work. You mean that? He kind of stumbles his way to an answer of, we should be doing what we did before when crime wasn't out of control. I know Lorena Gonzalez is complaining that crime was always out of control and steadily increasing. Bruce Harrell knows that that's not true. He knows that it's not true. So let's make sure that we are handling this crisis, in a way that actually gets us to the point of stopping all of the crime that's happening. And that starts by ignoring these lunatics who don't know what it is they're talking about, who are running for office, and focus on the candidate who can actually help. It's not going to be easy for KC6 killer to get some attention here in the waning days of this race, but I'd vote for him.